Hello, welcome to this week's episode of Commit or Quit. I am one of your co-hosts, Eddie Nam. And before we jump into our regular programming, I wanted to take a moment to address what is going on. As many of you may know, our entire network, Dive Studios, took a week off last week to stand in solidarity in the movement against racism and for racial equality. We believe that Black Lives Matter and acknowledge the underlying systemic issues that have for too long gone ignored and unresolved. So, if you are looking for places to donate and ways to get involved, we've provided a link from New York Mag in the episode description where you can decide which cause or organization best suits you. We encourage you all to stay informed, educated, and to join this ongoing fight. We hope you enjoy the following episode with Phoebe Robinson, and as always, thank you for listening.
What's up, Commit or Quit family? This is Eric Nam.
Yo, yo, this is Eddie Nam.
Welcome to the show. This is a show where we decide if we're going to commit to a show and watch it or quit it because we hate it. So, today we have another very special episode. We have a guest joining us today. Her name is Phoebe Robinson.
Yeah,
she is an incredibly talented friend of ours. She is a stand-up comedian, writer, actress, like multi-hyphenate. She does everything. Like literally she does everything. Writes books. Best-selling author. And we've become good friends over the past year. And so we asked her to join us and to suggest a show to us today. So today we're talking about this show called Insecure. And I really enjoyed this conversation.
I enjoyed the conversation. It was a nice change of pace. It was a totally different TV show, and I just thought it was overall really, really great.
Yeah, so I think you guys are going to really enjoy this episode. Stick around to the end. There are a lot of good tidbits in here, and hope you guys enjoy it. This is Commit or Quit. Let's go.
Goodbye.
No, don't go.
No, not. Listen. Enjoy.
Bye. Wait, no. Okay, bye. Hey, what do you want to watch?
I don't know.
Oh, I actually heard this is really good.
What do you say? Should we commit or quit?
So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we have a great, I'd like to say a great new friend of mine and Eddie's. And since we've known her, she is such a pleasure to be around, to work with, to have random conversations with. And so I'm so excited to have this seasoned veteran of comedy, of writing, of acting, of podcasting here with us today. Everybody, please welcome the incredibly talented Miss Phoebe Robinson. What's up, Phoebe?
Hi. Do people even know who I am? I feel like my footprint is like very negligible, but thanks for having me on.
No, Phoebe, everybody knows who you are. And if they don't, that's on them, not on you. So
facts.
Welcome to the show. Also, by the way, you have like multiple legs up on everybody because you've spoken with Tom Hanks. So
yeah, he's on my voicemail. That's he's the outgoing message on my voicemail.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, after this, I'm going to call your phone. Don't answer.
Okay.
I just want to hear the voicemail.
Okay.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he's the best.
Well, thanks for joining us. We're excited to have you. And before we jump into all this craziness, how have you been? What's been up in this amazing quarantine time?
Gosh, this is day 70. I feel like Bake Off and I, that's my boyfriend, British Bake Off, that's his code name. We were early adopters. We were early adopters to the game. So I feel like the thing that's interesting about being quarantined in New York is like, or like in Brooklyn proper, is like everyone's in apartments. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have like outside space if you don't have a balcony, and we don't have one. So we very much are like, you know, it's funny if I like see someone complain about quarantine and they have like grass. I'm like, you have trees, man. Like you are killing the game.
<It's> very true.
Yeah. So it's like that sort of thing where because I love like walking around New York City. That's mm-hmm. like one of my favorite things. It's like I run errands on my feet. Like I just love being in the mix of it. So like just being inside, I think is I'm experiencing the city in a way that I've never have. And I've been here for 18 years. So it's real. It's bizarre. It's very bizarre. I'm like, I have a new relationship with New York right now.
Mm-hmm. What have you been doing to stay busy? I saw you guys and Bake Off have been making pasta. You've been doing a lot of IG lives. What else? Have you picked up any new skills? Are you trying anything new? Have you improved any of your theatrical or musical performance capabilities?
I definitely been cooking more. So that's been fun. And sometimes Bake Off and I will cook together, or it'll be like, I got it today, you cook tomorrow. So that's been really nice. Making soups from scratch, pasta, baking things, making flatbreads. I think we're going to make a lasagna tonight, like a broccoli. Ooh. A broccoli with a little bit of ricotta and Parmesan. So that'll be like nice.
Sounds amazing.
We're doing our thing.
Putting the rest of us to shame. I love that when you said ricotta, you had the finger up like it was in Italian. Ricotta. And it was a little finger up.
We're running out of recipes over here. It's a problem.
You know what? I get most of my recipes from Apple News has like a food section. And so they'll usually will list like Good Housekeeping or like New York Times. Like I think for the next month, New York Times has all their recipes, or you have access to them for free. So I'm definitely like screenshotting those because I'm not going to pay once this month is up.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, it's like $5 a month for recipes.
Yes.
Like, I'm not doing that. I love New York Times, but I'm not doing that. No, thank you. Yeah. That's $5 of me buying another boba or iced coffee someday. That's what I'm doing.
Exactly. and I'm trying to learn how to play the piano.
Oh.
So that's been fun. What's your face? What's that face? What was that face?
No, when you said that's been fun, it was that facial expression of that's been fun, and then you forced the ends of your mouth to go up.
No. No, it has been. It's just been, I've been derailed because I'm working on a book proposal now. So I haven't practiced the piano in like 3 weeks. So I feel like I'm kind of like, I don't want to say I'm lazy, but it's just, it's hard to do multiple outputs of creativity. So I was just music is purely just for fun. So I need to do stuff for money right now. Right.
That's fair. Right. Yeah. I mean, okay. You're working on, I guess, another book proposal. Let's run down briefly. Like, what have you been up? Like, it's hard for me to keep up with the amount of projects that you do because you have so many shows. You're producing. You have a new deal with a new production company called Tiny Reparations, which you founded. You are a best-selling author. You just do everything. You know, last we spoke, you were coming off tour. So what are you working on now? What are some things that we can look forward to coming in the next months or year of projects that you've been working on?
Yeah. So Tiny Reparations started last August, I think. I like launched the company while I was like in Edinburgh doing stand up, which was kind of like stressful to launch it in a different country than where you are. But technology makes it easy. But it's been good. So like right now we sold one project. So I think we're going to get ready to pitch it out to networks.
Congrats.
And then I have Everything's Trash, which is based off my last book. That's like, I'm adapting that for a TV series. So I'm hoping that I could take that out in June and shop it around. But we're doing like a lot of fun development, which has been really cool. And it's just me, my head of development, Jose Acevedo, and then the lovely Mai Nguyen, who, if you follow me on Instagram, you know that Mai is an icon. She's truly the most gorgeous, like perfect person I've ever met in my life. And I'm like trying to get her to like move in with me.
Oh, really?
This is the new norm. Why not?
Yeah. I like my boyfriend and I will go on like realtor.com or like Street Easy, and we'll be like, is this a big enough house that you would consider moving in?
I mean, it's a very real option. Literally, my latest thing is I'm going to buy a farm. That's what I keep telling myself. I'm going to buy a farm and I'm just going to grow fruits and make jams and jellies and wine. So
oh, that's
Eric's
so cute.
Obsessed with this lately. He wants to like buy a farm and then make his own wine and basically hunt and plant things. And you know, it sounds great. But
live from the land.
Where is this farm going to be? Like in Colorado?
Washington, Colorado, some part of Cali. And then I'm thinking about taxes. So I'm like, okay, do I need to go somewhere cheaper? I don't know. Sorry.
Oh, wow. Eric, you're doing great. I didn't know about this. You're able to buy all these farms. Like to have a little discussion later.
it's all hypotheticals, but in the same way that you're hypothesizing my moving in with you. You know, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's options. Yeah.
So there's that. And then I'm working on a book proposal, which I hope to also shop around next month. So I'm a little bit like the gray hairs are coming in and I'm like scared.
No, you're killing it. You're doing so well. And it's like, it's amazing. And I think watching you do these projects is a source of motivation and inspiration for me. Because I think,
really?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think it's so cool because for me, what I know is the music side. And I'd say like TV side in Korea and Asia. And then I see how you're maneuvering and all the different things that you have going on concurrently. And I'm like, oh, wow. She's doing it in such an interesting and different way. How do we learn from how she's building and emulate that? And so it's been really, really fascinating to watch you maneuver the waters. And so congratulations on everything. It's really cool.
Thanks, Eric. Most of the time, I feel like I'm just not, you know, I'm flailing and I'm trying and then I'm not succeeding. You know, but like when you're in it, it's like it's hard to see, to have the perspective of like, okay, I'm like moving forward and the process is going okay. It just feels like, like I don't know, like where my 2 feet are. You know what I mean? It's tough sometimes, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's, well, you're killing it. And I think the only thing that I can say to that is I feel like for creatives, that's just life. Like for creatives, it's like we don't know what's going to be next and we just have to make it up. And it just comes out from wherever our heads are. That's why it's hard.
Yeah. Are you like writing a new album yet? I mean, I know it's like hard because your last album literally just came out and like you didn't even get to finish the tour for that. But like, I don't know if like being inside and making you want to work on new music or are you still just sort of like.
I mean, I have almost an entire album ready to go now that we've written completely in quarantine. Yeah, we're in the final processes of like, you know, taking some, like, I think it'll be a Korean album. And so we're taking the right songs, putting them into Korean, saving the other ones for an English album, and then just kind of filtering through what makes sense. So hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, there'll be a new album in the summer. And
wait, summer 2020?
Yeah.
That's like next week.
Like, I know. Like, Eric, to clarify, like an EP. Say, right?
Okay.
Yeah, it's an EP, but it's still, but like, look, to me, it's the same thing. An album is what, like 8 to 10 songs. An EP is still 6 songs. It's like 2 songs off from being an album. I'm calling it an album. So,
wow. What's the vibe? Is it like sensual? Is it like Rage Against the Machine? Is it like,
okay, so here's the issue. Like, the reason that it's taking me a little longer is everything that I find myself writing right now is like, get me out of this trapped hellhole. And like, I want to be free. Like all these songs about like purported like freedom and how do you rationalize that? And so it's been like, I don't want to sing just about being trapped. So it's just trying to find other stories and like other interesting ways to approach how I'm feeling. And so it's been an interesting journey, but we're getting there and, we'll be fine. It'll be good.
It's still been 2 months though. You know, it's like when people say they're putting albums out in quarantine or building, it's been like a pretty long time so far.
It
it's
has
not
been.
Like a, something yeah. that's been whipped up. So I'm looking forward to it. There are a couple songs I haven't even heard yet.
Well, Phoebe, before we jump into like the show, right? And I feel like we've talked a lot about recent times and stuff, but for people who aren't so familiar with your work and who you are, I think I'd love to introduce them to where you're from and how you got into the career that you have right now, right? And like, how do you like to like describe yourself? You have so many, you're a multi-hyphenate. So like, what's the best way of when you walk into your room, it's like, hi, I'm Phoebe, and this is what I do, and this is where I'm from. What is that version for you?
Well, I would say I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, but I feel like I'm a city girl at heart, hence me living in New York. I think I'm an extroverted introvert for sure. Okay. Like doing stand-up, like I love that and I love the attention. But when I'm not on stage, like I really don't crave attention at all. So mm-hmm. I like to just go about my life and just do my things. But yeah, I'm a multi-hyphenate. I do stand-up, I write, I produce, I act, podcasts. You know, I just like to, I think I just like to keep myself engaged and challenged and feel like I'm almost not going to be able to pull off what I'm trying to pull off. Okay. Because it's like, I'm not like, I don't play sports. I'm not like an adventure junkie. So being creative in multiple lanes and seeing how I can figure that out is like what I like. But I feel like I'm 35 now. I'm going to turn 36 during the core. And I feel like,
core.
And I feel like, meeting Bake Off, we'll be together 3 years this summer. It's made me less of a workaholic and enjoy life more. Like I think everything was so, I'm so type A, so goal oriented that it's like I'm enjoying like playing or like taking a vacation. And like truly checking out instead of saying, I'm going to take a vacation and then on my work emails the entire time. So I think now I'm sort of like learning to enjoy life a little bit more. And I am, to close, I am U2's number one fan.
Yes, you are.
No, I will battle to the death for that title. and... I'm like, really? So this is a quick aside, but I took Bake Off to Mumbai for his birthday in December. We were going to do like a New York birthday here, but then U2 was playing in Mumbai for the first time ever.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Right. So I was like, let's change your birthday and I'll plan a new trip for India. And he was like, okay. And the other day I was like, babe, you know, like been thinking about this, the core and like, it's like just made me really like introspective. And I was just like, you know, I'm really glad that we got to go to India so I could see Bono one last time before the quarantine. And Bae was like, that's not the takeaway from this time. But he was like, what are you talking about?
There's so many other things you could have learned from this experience, but I'm glad you came away with the most important one, having seen Bono one last time.
Bono's incredible, though. Hard,
yeah.
To be fair.
That's cool, but I'm also like kind of a crazy person. My boyfriend puts up with a lot.
It's all of us. I mean, for people who have not listened to your podcast, I mean, how many times have you met Bono?
I've hung out with him like a handful of times. And every once in a while we'll email, but it's usually like he'll send me like a nice like birthday message. And so I cherish the like emails or whatever. But he's just really like the nicest, like so sweet, so kind. Like he is so smart. That's the one thing. It's like, I feel so dumb around him. So I always like make jokes to like deflect from the fact that I'm like not as smart as him. But he's cool. He's like my hero and I adore him and he's just like the best.
That's awesome. Well, okay. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Like here's another thing though. Not only are you, you know, you have Tom Hanks on your voicemail, you're good friends with Bono now. You're also like best friends with Michelle Obama. So you got to pick one. Who are you going to choose? What's going to happen?
Oh my gosh. I have to choose between the... Okay. I'm going to say because my relationship with Tom Hanks is like the... Like, he does not remember ever meeting me. So it's like we could... I'm sure of it.
It has to be reciprocated. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So we could put him to the side. It's tough because I think what Michelle Obama, like, not only has done for my career, but just for empowering Black women is so mm-hmm. important.
Right.
And so I just really idolize her. And I think she's so smart and wonderful. And she's so kind and generous. It's, I have to choose between them.
You don't have to, but yes.
As like my ride or die, like my pretend ride or die.
Yeah, your pretend ride or die. Like pretend like you guys are best friends for life. Who's it going to be?
I think I could be more ratchet around Bono and not be judged. I feel like Michelle would be like, bitch, what the fuck is this? Who are you?
Yeah, who could you be the most comfortable around in quarantine, essentially?
Like, I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, like Bono would not. He's a rock star. He's not going to judge, you know?
Right.
But Michelle's like, she's gone to Princeton. She was a lawyer, like. She broke barriers. She does not have time for my ignorant ass. So, which makes sense. That makes total sense.
I remember the first time or one of the times that we were hanging out, you're like, have you met Michelle? And in the back of my head, I was like, Michelle, like who? And then I was like, there's no way she's referring to Michelle Obama. But you're like, oh, like Michelle Obama. And I was like, what are you talking about? In what world is that a casual, like, oh, have you hung out with Michelle? And then Phoebe goes, oh, she would love you. Like, you guys would be great friends. I was like, yeah, right. And I just, like, walked away. Phoebe, let's be very clear here. I'm having you on this podcast so I can meet Michelle and Bono one day. So I'm just going to throw it out there. That's it. We're having you commit to that.
I can make it work. Great. I can do it. Great. I'll do it.
Okay, great. Joking aside, I think it's about time we jump into the reason that we're here today is to discuss a show that you suggested for us to decide if we commit to or we quit. And I think I'm actually really excited to talk about this and also to have you because I think you're only our second female guest. And one thing we've wanted to have is more women on the show. And just like more varied perspectives and opinions. And I'm so glad that we went with this show. So today's show is called Insecure. And I'm so excited to jump into it. Before we have you kind of make a case for it, Eddie, if you could kind of introduce to us what Insecure is, I think it'd be great.
Sure. I'd like to share the HBO synopsis. Creator Issa Rae stars as Issa Dee, who struggles to navigate the tricky professional and personal terrain of Los Angeles along with her best friend Molly, played by Yvonne Orji.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Was a great reading. That was great.
I feel like I'm getting better.
Yeah, I think you improved a lot from last week.
Thank you.
There wasn't like a weird pause. I liked it. So Insecure is an HBO comedy drama series. It has been renewed for its fifth season. And it is loosely based on Rae's past web series, Awkward Black Girl, which was 2011 through 13. So to break it down for you guys, just a little bit, I've only seen the first two or three episodes because that's the concept of the show. But in episode one, we meet the protagonist, Issa Dee, who works for a nonprofit organization in LA. And she's around 28, 29. And she's frustrated with her life. She goes through a midlife crisis or quarter life crisis. And it's kind of figuring out, is she happy with her job? She's a little unhappy with her unemployed boyfriend. And then there's her running into her ex-boyfriend, Daniel. Meanwhile, her best friend, Molly, who's her BFF since college, is a very, very successful corporate attorney. But her dating life isn't the best either. So that's episode one. In episode two, we see Molly, Issa's best friend, trying to find love. Despite all these failed attempts on all those crazy apps, Tinder, OkCupid, Hinge, et cetera, and just kind of showing that dating in the digital age is pretty tough. Meanwhile, there's another story of Issa kind of coming out into the open with her performing creative side. She starts to rap at an open mic, and she and her boyfriend are trying to figure out what their future is like together. And then there's also this subplot of her at work where She's the only Black girl in a nonprofit that's supposed to be serving inner city kids that just seems completely out of touch. So there's a lot to unpack in these short 2 30-minute episodes, a lot of different plots going on. But that's kind of the best way that I can explain it for you guys. I hope that gets you to a place of understanding where we're going to jump into this conversation. But Phoebe, is there anything that I missed that I absolutely need to hit on before we jump into this?
No, I think you did a great job of summarizing everything. And I would say visually, it's just such a cool looking show.
Yeah.
I just love that. I think the visuals are like another character, if you will, in the series.
Fair. I did, as I was watching it, I had a lot of like nostalgia and FOMO. I'd be like, oh my God, humans. Oh my God, that's a bar. Oh, that's a city.
Yeah. But it hit differently this time.
It really does. To kick it off though, Phoebe, why did you choose Insecure for Commit or Quit?
So I chose it for a lot of reasons. I've been a huge fan of Issa Rae's. Like, I remember watching her web series on YouTube when I still had my office job. I was like a legal assistant at this internet company, and I didn't know anything about law. Like, it was truly like me just watching Ally McBeal and being like, yeah, I guess that's what a deposition looks like or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Yeah.
But I just thought she always really tapped into sort of this kind of like, So in the States, like in the 90s, there's a lot of Black TV shows, and it was like Martin, like and Living Single, like all these shows. And then like in the early to mid aughts, like it all dried up. And there weren't really that many shows. There was like Girlfriends or like Bernie Mac show, but like it really went down by a lot. And I feel like Insecure is sort of like one of the first Black shows to sort of like push this new renaissance we're experiencing by having more diversity on television with Black people as well as Asian people, Latina people. So it's been really, really cool to see her and Insecure be at the forefront of this new age that we're living in terms of TV. Second reason is my good friend Amy Aniobi is a writer producer on the show. And she's like really smart, amazing, talented. And the third reason, I feel like it really sort of like what I liked about Sex and the City is that it was the fantasy of it all, right? Like Carrie like had no money but always wore like designer clothes. And like that was funny. She had like these super tight knit like girlfriends and they hung out literally all the time, which is like the dream for anyone. But I feel like Insecure is less about the fantasy and more about the reality of like, if you don't have money, like your clothes aren't going to look great. Your apartment's not going to be like perfectly designed. Like you're not going to be able to hang out with your girlfriends every single day because you're hustling and working. So I really like that it rooted the show in reality, but still made it fun and enjoyable. Like, oh, I want to hang out with these girls every week, even though they're on struggle bus right now. Was that too much? Did I talk too much?
No, I think that made a lot of sense. And just like the reality of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, no, like I think I was watching it and it felt like to me, I just love that it just seemed like real. I feel like I was looking into the lives of these people who seem very likable. And I think it's very current in the way that it's being made. I look at shows like that. And I thought of kind of like Aziz Ansari's, what was that called?
Master of None.
Mm-hmm. Master of None. I also thought of Atlanta. Just it looks like a more intimate view into a certain perspective of life. And I'm really glad that we're able to kind of jump into it and then talk about some of the topics that come with the show. Great.
So Eric, why don't we jump into like the central themes and topics that we kind of came up with?
One thing that was really cool for me is just like being able to see a completely different perspective. I'm obviously not a Black woman. So, you know, just watching it, I feel like there are points made where I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. That's very relatable. Some not. I think one thing that I kept thinking about, though, is how even before this conversation, if we talk about issues or topics on race, right? I feel like race is such a tricky topic because whenever you talk about it, even as like an Asian American, I don't want to be a representative for all Asian Americans, mm-hmm. right? And I don't think anybody should be speaking on behalf of an entire people or an ethnicity. But when there are TV shows or there are people at the forefront of it, one way or another, we are forced to kind of take that burden or play that role. How have you navigated kind of that path and that role in your career as a woman of color, a comedian, a writer? How has that affected you?
Yeah, I mean, I think when Jessica Williams and I, she used to be on The Daily Show, acted in a bunch of movies. When we started Two Dope Queens, 2014, maybe, we just started because we were like, there are so many shows in New York that don't have people of color on them, don't have queer people on, don't have women on. A lot of late night shows that have like a bunch of like white guys with beards wearing like, you know, button downs, but you would rarely see like diverse people. I hate to say diverse people. You would just rarely see a diverse selection of people do stand up on those shows. And so Jess and I were just kind of like, you know, we just enjoy hanging out. We enjoy making each other laugh. We know so many brilliant people who are super funny and amazing and aren't getting sort of the recognition we think they deserve. So that's really how we started the show. And when it launched as a podcast in 2016, it just went from a live show and just got more popular in New York. It would be interesting to read the messages that we would get because people would be like, thank you so much for this show. Like this is like how I hang out with my friends, or like, I never really listened to stand-up comedy because it was all just like white guys like Seinfeld. I never felt like I would see anyone like reflected like me. And so that to me was when I sort of felt like, oh, like this means more to people than I thought it was going to. Mm-hmm, like it's more than just Jess and I hanging out. And like, this is an opportunity for people to feel like their lives are also reflected. So I think I don't necessarily feel pressure, but I feel like that's always the underlying mission of whatever I create, is that I want people to feel like they're not excluded from things. And I think unintentionally in the past, like a lot of creative things, like even something like Sex and City, and I love the show, but I was like, all the people of color on the show were kind of caricatures and not really people who had like multi-dimensional personalities or that interesting. And so I think I've always made sure that with the work that I do, that I'm trying to do that. I think because I'm not on the level of like an Issa Rae or like an Ava DuVernay, I don't necessarily feel the pressure that I'm speaking for or speaking on behalf of Black women. But I think there's a subset of Black women who identify with someone like me, who's like outwardly kind of nerdy, like an obsessive fan about things, like really like into hair and clothes, but also like, you know, will dork out about other stuff. So I think it feels more like we've all are like finding our own little tribes right now, which I think is super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's super important. I think from the top level of everything we see on the mainstream, that shouldn't be just the only representation that we see. So those subgenres and these tribes that you're talking about, it's true. It's very, very important. Even what we're doing with Eric, and we had Randall Park on the show last week. You know, we were saying how refreshing it was to see him in a role as like a painter. because he was so ordinary and he wasn't a kung fu master or a K-pop star. So, you know, there's more diverse roles to be played and produced out right now.
I think the one thing that was also just interesting is you have such diversity just in humans, but within like, you know, race as well. So like growing up as an Asian American, I was, you know, I think Eddie and I are probably the first to admit we're probably like the more preppy, like quote unquote banana Asians, right? It's just like so many different people have different backgrounds. They have different ways of growing up. Like there are Asians who grow up in inner cities. There are Asians who have a completely different experience from what we have. And I just don't think that we've gotten to a point where all of that is represented well mm-hmm. yet. We're going to get there, I pray to God. But shows like Insecure kind of helped, I think, provide different aspects of Black life and culture. And that's what, for me, as somebody who has been in Korea for 10 years and rarely has the opportunity to interact with people of color, it was very, very like fun and interesting and eye-opening to see, I guess, portions of that in the first mm-hmm. two episodes. I don't know, did you growing up, and I guess even now, like you said, you are self-described as like this nerdy fan culture Black girl. Was there ever like a sense of like, what is my identity and like, how do I identify in the community? Like, have you dealt with that in certain ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you're a person of color and you grow up in America, and I went to a prep school, and, you know, in a lot of white spaces, comedy certainly is a predominantly white space. You do sort of sometimes feel like, A, you either feel alone, or you feel like, I just am different from everybody and I just can't pinpoint it. And it's just sort mm-hmm. of like, I think as I've gotten older, I've just become more sure of myself and was just sort of embraced that, like, yeah, I'm not like the white guys. Like, and maybe that is my superpower in some ways, and like embrace that and sort of, you know, be okay with being different. But I do also think there is a lot of pressure when you are a person of color to, you want to be like super cool, like, and fit in with every single Black person, but you also want to like fit in with like white people. You also want to like, you know, speak to the mainstream, but also like do things that like sort of where you don't have to explain yourself. And I think like certainly with Two Dope Queens or like my books, I found ways where I was just like, I'm not going to necessarily translate everything. My experience mm-hmm. all the time, I think, is where I am now as a creative. Right. So I think the things that I'm writing now are less like me taking a time out to be like, hey, white people, okay, so this is what I mean by this. And now I'm just right. sort of like, you know, presenting my experience. And if you get it, you get it. If you don't. Like, I'm sure like when I was a kid and I was watching Seinfeld, I didn't get everything about being like
right.
a white guy. But I still got the, you know, there were enough context clues where I was still like, oh, I can identify with like Elaine, or like if I would totally be George in this situation. So I think now right. what's really exciting is because there are so many different avenues, I think that people of color hopefully feel less pressure to have to explain uh-huh. themselves all the time.
Right.
But I think it's just a matter of like finding your voice. And I think it's just a matter of like just giving yourself permission to not be boxed in by the definitions that your community has of what it means to mm-hmm. be your particular identity, as well as like what, you know, the rest of the world thinks of you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think like, it's easy to be like, oh, am I Black enough? Oh, I don't know. I shouldn't like this, or no, I shouldn't like that, or blah, blah, blah. I remember... Yeah. There's this promo picture that Jess and I took, and we both like listened to rock growing up and a lot of stuff. And she was wearing a Led Zeppelin t-shirt. And I remember we had these trolls on Twitter being like, these two girls are always talking about like Black culture and like making sure Black voices are heard, but they're wearing a Led Zeppelin shirt. Like, they shouldn't be like, and I was like, but Black people created rock. What are we, you know what I mean? But it feels uh-huh. like even though we like had a hand in creating this genre, we're like not allowed to listen to it because we're Black women. And so it's that right. sort of stuff where it was just like, I think these arbitrary walls of like, if you are Asian, you are only allowed to listen to this. If you're Latinx, you're only allowed to listen to this. It's like, what the fuck? Like, you just want to enjoy the culture and the art and eat it up, and it all shapes you and it all makes you like who you are, and like none of mm-hmm. us are this pure thing. And right. I think when we are trying to box, put everyone into one tiny box, we're like not allowing them to be influenced by the world, and we're not allowing them to influence the world. So I think now that I'm older, I'm like, I just wave. I just say what I like loud, proud. I don't care. And mm-hmm. it all shapes me. And I think the stuff that I'm putting out, I think is making people feel like they can be themselves too. Was that just a lot of rambling? I'm sorry.
No, that was great. I mean, that's so insightful, because one of the things that I definitely wanted to ask is, like, I've felt it growing up. It's like, am I Asian enough? Am I mm-hmm. like, you know, I've heard Twinkie, I've heard banana, I've heard all these different things. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. There's moments where I don't feel American enough and I'm too Asian. Like, it's a split identity crisis thing of like, who am I? What am I? Like, and then at the end of the day, I'm like, I don't know. This is just me. And that's just the way it is. But like, I remember as a kid, like in high school, middle school, like I would have distinctly different groups of friends. Like, one was an Asian group of friends. One is a white group of friends. And come full circle, like 10, 15 years later, people are like, I didn't know you had like Asian friends. And I was like, well, here they are. Because everybody meets up at my concerts. They're like, yeah. How could you not tell us about your Asian friends? Like, I don't know. I felt like they live 50 minutes out. I'm not going to make you guys all drive 50 minutes to meet my Asian friends. So I don't know. I always felt like that was something that I had to come to terms with. And I think the way you said it sums it up perfectly. Like, now I'm at an age where I'm like, I don't really care. If you want to be friends, we can be friends. And if you don't think I'm Asian enough, that's fine. But I am Asian. Like, what you going to do about it?
I think media has played a big role in you even making those introductions. Growing up in high school, I was embarrassed of being Korean in the Korean culture and cuisine and music or whatever that was coming out of Korea. So I shied away from it. But after going to college and then our childhood friends meeting more people of color and being like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, I know how to eat this food. That was eye-opening to me, how people have started progressing with social media and cancel culture being used in the right way and people getting called out for their ignorant shit. Like, I think that's a good step forward that I've seen for people like us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's still hard for me because, like, even last night, like, Mai was like she's been trying to get me to be an active participant in TikTok for a while. And I'm such an old lady. I don't know anything, but there is like a tiny fear, like way deep down inside. I was like, I don't think I'm like cool and black enough to do all these like fucking cool ass dances. Like, I can't do any of that. And so I'm like, you know what I mean? I'm like a failure as a black person. Cause I don't think I could pick up like the fucking savage dances and all these things that all these like, gorgeous black women are doing on TikTok. So it makes me go, oh, I feel like I'm not black enough. And like, I still have those little tiny moments, you know, and I know it's silly because it is just TikTok, but it just, you know, you just feel that.
Have you watched Black AF on Netflix yet?
I have. I'm halfway through the first season. Yeah.
There is that moment where they're at, like, they have like all the families come and have a party. Mm-hmm. And Rashida Jones' character sees her two sons and she was like, make them stop dancing. They can't do that. And yeah. I thought that was really funny. But like, beyond that, TikTok is a terrifying platform. I cannot figure it out for the life of me. Like, I had a rant on a podcast a few weeks ago where I was like, people want you to stay relevant, but I don't think I can any longer be relevant with the rise of TikTok because this is too difficult. It's too much.
You're getting left behind.
Call me a traditionalist. Call me an antique. I don't know. Like, me waving my arms in a bathroom by myself is weird. I can't do it.
Yeah. But I think it's good that for the current generation that's on it, like, they have like this is their playground. This is their space. And I'm like, you guys have that. I will like go listen to Anita Baker and pour myself a glass of wine. And that's my playground.
I guess when it comes to, you know, back to the show Insecure, when we look at Issa and her friend Molly's dynamic, that relationship, I thought it was interesting because I guess it's framed in a way where like Molly seems to have everything together. You know, she's doing very well. And there was also that moment, I don't know if this isn't actually episode 3 or not, where there's another black girl that comes in to the firm and she's kind of be like, hey, like, you got to kind of tone it down kind of thing. I thought that was just like, Have there been moments, I guess, in your career where you felt like you've had to kind of put a side of you away? You know, like right now we can say like we could be proud of who we are and just like mm-hmm. whatever. But like, you know, I feel like there's also a recent development, being able to be that open and accepting of people for just for the way they are. How did you kind of like take that scene and those relationships in watching the show?
Yeah, I love that scene because I think that whenever people of color are in work environments, especially if it's corporate or like super quote unquote like professional, like a law firm, mm-hmm. you definitely are like, oh, well, I have to turn into a different version of myself. You know, like I'm not going to necessarily be as like, you just don't want any, like sometimes you feel like I don't want there to be any signifiers that go, that's the black person in the office, you know? So you might like mm-hmm. speak a little bit quieter, or like the kind of food that you have at lunch might be different, or you'll like want to maybe like not style your hair a certain way. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like yeah. a lot of things that go into like being in a work environment and sort of feeling like I just want to fit in, and I don't want to stand out as the black person here, because I don't know if that's like, A, are they just using me as like the token, or B, are they looking down on me because I'm not like them? So you sort of like dull the edges a little bit, which is kind of like, you know, I think that scene in particular with her telling the intern, hey, maybe like tone down your personality, like don't be like sassy and loud, because it's like, well, I don't want them to like not take us seriously as professionals. Yeah. And like, that's very true. And I think that like, luckily now that I'm in comedy, I don't really have to worry about that as much, but I definitely do feel when I'm going into pitch meetings, when I'm, you know, talking to execs over at ABC Studios, like I know that I have to prepare like twice as hard and have an answer to every conceivable question. Otherwise, I'm going to be looked at as unprepared. Whereas uh-huh. if I were like a white dude, they would just be like, they ask a question, oh, but you don't have to have the answer now. It's like, I'm never, you know, you hear that all the time. You're like, bitch, I definitely have to have the answer now, you know? Right. And so I love that that scene was like, it wasn't heavy handed and insecure, but it was very right. much like, this is what it's like to work in a corporate environment when you are a person of color and you're trying to move up, and right. the pressures that you feel that maybe your other coworkers don't have to feel because they aren't the same skin color as you.
Mm-hmm. I think moving from that, like a great time in the show where Issa and Molly feel completely comfortable with each other is when it's just the two of them. It's just mm-hmm. two of them. They can be who they are. They're very just open. They can fend through everything. They are open about their struggles and their emotions. And I think that's probably when we see the most true colors of who they are as these characters. One thing that I thought was really fun is them diving into like dating in the digital age and like these quarter life crisis that they're going through. Have you been on any dating apps? I know you're in a great relationship with Bake Off for 3 years, but thoughts on dating apps in general and dating as an adult?
I mean, I was on some dating apps and like it was never a successful for me. And now that I'm in a relationship, I am like, Godspeed, you guys. It is rough in these streets. I just feel like I just am such a, like, I have to just meet people in person. Like, I met Bae at a concert. Like, I this whole, like, looking at a picture, someone summarized themselves in, like, 300 words, and you deciding whether they're worth your time or not feels so bizarre, because people aren't flat summaries and perfect pictures. You know what I mean? So right. it feels like you're not shopping for zucchini. Like, this is someone that you like, you know, that you want to like date or like have sex with or just like meet and like hang out. And so I think that was the thing that I struggled with, because I think like on a dating app, you could take your time and compose the right message. Like, there's just mm-hmm. all these things that like aren't what actual human interaction is. So then when sure. you would sometimes meet up in person, it might feel awkward, or you might be like, oh, this is different than I thought it was going to be. And it, I don't know. So I just think it's really hard to be on dating apps and like, you know, I just think everyone feels the pressure to be like, I'm the most interesting person and I go on vacations and I rock climb and I work out and I listen to coolest music and I have the dopest job and my friends are the best and the coolest clothes. And there's just a part of me that feels like all these dating apps just make you sometimes feel bad about yourself and go, yeah. Well, I'm not as interesting as these people. Like, I haven't done a road trip or I don't have as much money or what. Like, I just feel like, I don't know. But there are so many friends I know who have like successful relationships through dating apps because they were just like going out to a bar or being set up with friends like didn't work. So I think right, it kind yeah. of just depends on your personality.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, Eddie, you've been with your wife for a while. Like, you guys didn't meet on an app, right?
We met each other in high school, actually. But we didn't start dating until after college. But around that time is when the social media dating app started happening. So I was closely observing through my friends and the excitement that they felt with all of these options. But I think quickly they realized that having too many options was actually a bad thing. Because even if you have a good date with somebody, you're always thinking there's somebody out there that's better and can make up for that lacking of a characteristic that you're looking for rather than building a relationship over time, right? I looked into a lot of this in college and I thought it was fascinating how like our parents' generation and just a little bit older than us, they were always hooking up with people that were just within close proximity of them. Neighborhoods, schools, jobs, whatever it is. It wasn't just this like, let me set a 50-mile radius and see who loves soccer. it just seems too easy. And we've spoken about this as well. There's a beauty in meeting someone even through a mutual connection and taking the time to respect that introduction in the moment you met and cultivating that relationship. I don't think there's really time with that in these dating apps. From what I've heard.
Yeah. What about you, Eric? Because you're pretty famous. Like, I just imagine that it would just, I think you are. Like, I think it would just be, I think it would be hard to date when you're famous because you're like, are you dating me for me or for what you think I am?
Right.
You know?
I mean, it is complicated. It is hard. I've had issues in the past where it's just like, it's like, oh, you're nothing like you seem on TV. I'm like, well, what do I seem like on TV? Like, and it's, I mean, I don't like to, I think that I'm pretty straightforward when it comes to on and off screen. I think it's like pretty much the same, but I think when it comes to entertainment, there's always, it's always an exaggerated version of yourself, I feel like. And that's where it's like, well, this is just the way I am. And I hope you can deal with it. And, it's dating apps freak me out. Like I refuse to download one. And I had a conversation with a friend this past week, a lot actually, because he's been trying to find somebody on these apps. And he was like, why does this not, like, why are you so against it? And I think it's because, like you were saying, it's a very reductive process and it reduces who you are as a person onto like a single page, which is weird. And secondly, I think the other thing is you download an app with the purpose and the focus of either hooking up or finding somebody to date and potentially marry or whatever it is. And that idea to me is so weird. Like for some people it works, that's great. But for me, I think maybe I'm just like a romantic at heart where like I still want to have an in-person meeting of like, at a bar, at a concert. And I don't know when we'll be back at concerts or at a bar.
Yeah. But,
just like kind of like that very natural kind of meeting kind of thing. So I don't know. Dating apps kind of freak me out.
Yeah.
I'm like, meh.
Speaking of,
I was asked to be I was asked to be the spokesperson for Tinder in Korea.
Yes, get that money though. Like, don't use the app, but get that money.
Get the bag.
Yo, I already turned that
down. This could help all of us.
But anyways, sorry, what were you going to say, Phoebe?
Oh, I was going to say the other thing about dating apps is it just made me go, I just was like, I was like, oh, am I not pretty enough? Like, I just was always like, how I measure up against the other girls who were like, you know what I mean? Like, it just made me so self-conscious and so like beating myself up. And also like Black women get the least sort of like, unfortunately, because of racism, they get the least amount of like interaction on dating apps. So that would also make it frustrating. So like whenever I did spark with a guy, more often than not, he'd be like, are you like, what are you? It was like, are you mixed with something? And you'd be like, no, what? I'm just Black. It was just like, no, I'm just,
wait,
I'm
that's
just
their
Black.
Question? Amer-
yeah. Like you'd be talking for a little bit and whatever, you know. It's so fucked up because it was like, well, they don't want to date like a Black girl. It's like, are you mixed with something else that would be like more sort of appealing? And so it's just very sort of frustrating to be like, that was like the thing where I was like, I don't want to be on this anymore. I'm like, this is all subtly racist. Like, I'd rather just be horrifically single or maybe like joyfully single than like have some guy try and be like, can you please not be 100% like Black American? Because like, that's not like attractive. Like, it just was such a fucking bummer.
That's wild. I can't believe that.
Even with Asian men on the other end of the spectrum, right? They're usually
isn't it literally like Black women and Asian men are like the least desired on these apps?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brittany and I, my wife and I were having this, kind of funny conversation earlier this week because we're talking about our future kids and we're like, well, you know, surely they're going to be cute and good looking, right? They're mixed. But then Brittany was like, but I don't think I've ever seen like a white girl with an Asian guy. I'm like, you're right. I don't know what that's going to look like. But I mean, we'll see. Eric, we'll see.
I mean, no, it's they're going to be beautiful and it doesn't matter. Like, who cares? You know?
Yeah.
So I guess the last thing that, you know, I feel like today's episode has been interesting because I feel like we've gone in and out of discussing the show and just like applying it to our daily lives in a much more fluid way than we have in the past. I think one thing that I think listeners would really appreciate is one thing that is on the show is like this anxiety of turning 30. Of just about to hit 30. And as somebody who is into their 30s, looking at this show and connecting with it, what were some of the insecurities that you may have had at 30? And just like, as somebody who's just killing it right now, what is your perspective on age and how people can deal with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think being 35 now, I think I just know myself better. Mm-hmm. And trust my gut more and entertain drama less. I think it's like one of those things where it's like, you don't have to have dramatic friendships. You don't have to have drama filled like relationships for your life to be interesting. If anything, that's soul sucking and like toxicity, and it gets in the way of you actually living the life that you want to live. But I think, you know, because so much of like, whether it's like movie, TV shows, like even, you know, when you're growing up as a kid, like if you're a little girl, you're like six or whatever, you're in the playground and a boy punches you, that means he likes you. Like that's the stuff that you're told. So to me, I'm always like, it's no wonder that like literally every straight girl I know has dated douchebags because we're all taught like dysfunctional behavior is like what you should aspire towards because you being so amazing will change them. So then it puts the onus on the woman to be like this like gorgeous, like life-changing presence in every guy's life. And then if he doesn't change, then that also reflects poorly on you. As opposed to now, it's like you want to find someone, whether you're dating or you're just looking for a friend, you want to find someone that's going to make you better and not bring you down. And I think, you know, watching a show like Insecure and watching like Issa and Molly, like I've seen the show before. So it was really nice to sort of rewatch the first season along with you guys. And it was so, it's just interesting to see like in your 20s, like you just you don't know what you like sometimes. You don't
know
like what's the right call, what's the wrong thing to do. So you just kind of do shit in order to figure that out. And I think that is so valuable in what you should do in your 20s. And I think now being in my 30s is sort of like, you know, sort of taking that information and like learning on it and building a better, more interesting life for yourself. And then also like you are a little more introspective in a way where you're like, oh, I'm also have these problem areas. Where in the 20s, uh-huh. just like everyone's a drama queen and I don't get it because I don't love drama. It's like, bitch, yeah. you love drama, you know? And then now your 30s, you're kind of like, oh, this is how I'm participating in this particular like relationship going a particular way. So I think it's been really nice being in my 30s. I think I'm happier for sure. I have more self-esteem mm-hmm. now than I did when I was younger. And, you know, I think the other thing that society makes you feel like you have to have everything figured out by 18 or 21. And I think because of that, it makes a lot of young people go, oh shit, I'm fucking up because I mm-hmm. don't know. Mm-hmm. And now in my 30s, I'm kind of like, yeah, there are so many things that I don't know and I embrace that. And right. I'm like, well, hopefully when I'm in my 40s, I will learn X, Y, Z that I couldn't possibly know now. But aging does, because I'm in Hollywood and I am a woman, I am very conscious of aging. You know, I'm very into skincare because I want to look slightly younger than I am. Which I realize is not the most healthy thing to participate in, but here we are. but I think what's really cool is now seeing someone like a Reese Witherspoon or seeing like Nicole Kidman be in her late 40s and producing all this stuff and like being so accomplished in her 40s when like 30 years ago, that just wouldn't happen. So it reminds me that there's always time to like do more and develop more. And you don't have to have everything done by 25 or else your life is meaningless. Like I think we put so many arbitrary milestones on people and it makes people unhappy because it's like maybe you won't have career success until you're 45.
Right.
But does that mean that your life sucks because you didn't figure it out until then, you know? So I think with a show like Insecure, like seeing them in their 20s, it definitely reminds me of how I was in my 20s. And it's so good to be like, oh, I'm so glad I'm not like that anymore. You know,
so
I mean, like,
we've moved beyond that.
Yeah. It's so glad that like, you know, Issa's character has been with Lawrence for 5 years and it's clearly like just not a great relationship. And it's like, you don't need 5 years to realize your relationship is not good.
Right.
The older you get, you could be like, 3 months, oh, this is going to be trash. I'm pressing like the injector button. Yeah, and you peace out. And I think you just learn to trust yourself more. And I think what you look for in other people and yourself, I think has a layer of substance that it just didn't have before. Mm-hmm. Was that good?
That was great. I think, you know, we're about that time where we have to go ahead and decide if we commit or quit to the show. I mean, obviously you're committed. You've seen the entire show, but for people who, you know, if they made it through this episode of this podcast and they're still on the edge, like give us like two sentences. Why should they watch the show? And why should they watch the show in like two or three sentences?
I think you guys should watch Insecure because I think it is just shows a very specific voice and captures a very specific time in all our lives. And the cinematography is great. The acting is good. It's funny as hell. And I think if we want things to change, we should support these shows that have people of color just being themselves. Like, we don't always have to be like slaves or like dealing with adversity to be of interest or of worth or of value. Right. And I think just having a show where a Black woman is just being her damn self, like that is so impactful and powerful. And I think that's not shown enough. And I think as a result, people don't necessarily see the potential in Black women. So maybe watching the show might change how you feel about Black women. And that could be really fucking cool.
Right.
There we go. All right, Eddie, what do you think? Commit or quit?
Yeah, this is a strong commit for me. I've been looking forward to checking this show out. I've actually gotten to know one of the actors in the recent season, Alexander Hodge. Had dinner with him and have been following him, and he's been really blowing up. And when you recommended this, I was very excited. But the writing, I thought, was key. The acting, the scene in the first episode after the stand-up goes wrong and they're just barking at each other left and right. I was like, this is hilarious. Everybody's so good at their roles. And I agree to the most important part. Just having more representation in roles that we haven't seen before that may be just very, very normal. But again, it's not the sexiest story to tell or the most controversial. Like, this is just real life. And so I'm glad for Commit or Quit. This is a different show and in the best way possible.
Yay!
Eric, how about you?
I'm committing to this show as well. I found myself after the first two episodes, I cheated. I went ahead and watched the next one. I have to admit it because, and it's for all the reasons that you guys have shared, but it's just a normalization thing of just like people who are living their lives. And I think for me, the interesting part was like having a completely different perspective on life. And there are still many points that are relatable, many points that are new that I feel like I'm taking away and new ideas and ways that people have approached it. I think, to be very honest, like coming into this conversation and having to discuss things like race, it is a sensitive topic. And no matter how much we try to tiptoe around it, we have to be able to address it in a way that's conducive to like growth and understanding. And so I was like nervous because I was like, because people on the internet can take this and be like, he completely took this in a different way or like a context. But like, but I'm glad that we were able to have this somewhat of a informed discussion about like how this affects our lives and what we've taken away from it. And I'll just say, I'm excited to kind of go through the seasons and just see Issa and how she develops as somebody about to hit 30 and just life in LA. And I thought it was very well done. So commit for me as well. Thanks for bringing it, Phoebe. Yes.
Oh my gosh. There are going to be some choices made that you're going to be like, what the fuck? It's so good. It's so good. It's like you make these mistakes and you have to learn. I think that show really shows that off well. So
yay. Yeah,
there's a reason why there's four seasons right now. It's obviously
yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Before we start wrapping up, we have some like questions from fans on Twitter that we wanted to ask you, if that's
cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first one comes from Chaturi and it is, hey, how do you find inspiration as a stand-up comedian? That's a very broad question, but
yeah, I think a lot of my stand-up comes from my personal life. So the hour that I was touring, last year was a lot. There was like a good chunk of it about moving in with my boyfriend and us living together and sort of learning about each other. So I try to just, I always want my stand-up to take people's minds off of like the hardships in their life, just make them laugh. And also if I can have like a little bit of social commentary, I'll sprinkle it in there. But it's just really, I just pluck from my life.
Okay, cool. You know what's interesting though? Like when I look at stand-up comedians, a lot of the stand-up comedians, I'd say until recently, it came from a dark place. I feel like a lot of stand-up comedians were really depressed or like really had some dark moments in their lives. Now, I don't know all of your life, but like I think it's interesting that these days it seems like just finding those moments, even in the most happy, pleasurable lives that we can find comedy. And when you're saying like a lot of it comes from like you living with your boyfriend and that kind of stuff, I think that's cool. Like it signifies some sort of like shift in terms of where we're going with comedy, which I think is great. It's a little more positive.
Yes, I agree.
Next question is from, that's, I can't read that tagline, but the question is, any tips on how to gain confidence?
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, I think confidence is, it's like one of those things where it's not like there's a stop, a start and a finish. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. confidence ebbs and flows throughout your life, I think. And so what I have worked on is surrounding yourself with people who are going to reinforce that confidence. I think a lot of times people unwittingly are around people who are either a reflection of how they feel about themselves or, well, they have these two good qualities, which makes up for this bad thing that makes me feel terrible about myself. So I think surrounding yourself with really positive, supportive people is one thing. I think second is like learning to trust your gut through trial and error. Like I think a lot of times you lack confidence is because you don't know if you necessarily believe that you have the agency or the authority over your own life. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing I would say, confidence is sort of like, I think sometimes when we talk about confidence, it's like, it means I don't give a fuck about anything or anyone's opinion. I just do whatever. And to me, I feel like confidence is, you know, is in concert with like vulnerability and sort of like being open to like feeling absorbing and understanding that you don't know everything, that you're not always going to be right, that you're going to fuck up, and that's still okay. So I think if those things are remembered, I think your confidence will just keep growing as time goes.
Amazing. Thank you for that. Well, hope our fans and your fans are gaining some valuable insights to life through this show. To wrap it up, first, thank you so much for making time. We really appreciate it. I know you're incredibly busy, but I loved just reconnecting with you and having a conversation about a fun show. And thank you for introducing us to this show. Before we let you go, is there anything that you want to plug or share or tease or anything like that? Or everything kind of under wraps?
Yeah, there are things that are under wraps. So I will plug other people. My good friend Michelle Buteau has a book coming out in December, Survival of the Thickest, and it's a memoir. You can pre-order that. All the girls or all the women on Insecure are phenomenal. So just like support what they're doing. Comic I know in LA, Sarah Schaefer, has a memoir coming out in August called Grand. I read an advanced copy of it. It was wonderful. And my birthday is September 28th. I'm turning 36. And it will probably happen within the core. We'll all be inside. So just positive vibes my way if you remember my birthday.
We'll send them your way.
Okay, good.
All right. Well, thank you again so much. We really enjoyed speaking with you. You're the freaking best. And hopefully we get through core together and we'll be able to give each other hugs when we see each other soon.
Yes, this was so fun.
Yeah.
No, 2021 is my prediction.
Okay, 2021.
I think so too.
I hope so. But thank you. This was a lot of fun and I hope it wasn't painful.
No, this is
Phoebe,
great.
Thank you for your insight. Like everything you've said, I'm just sitting here. I can listen to you talk all day.
Oh, thank you. This is just like really nice to just like do a podcast and it's all people of color and it's just like great. It's just so fun. It's more of this. So you guys are really doing like the awesome, cool work that like needs to continue. So thank you.
Well, thank you. You're welcome back anytime. Please let us know if you ever want to come.
Yay!
But yeah. So this wraps up, I guess, this special guest episode of Commit or Quit with the incredible Miss Phoebe Robinson. So please check out her stuff, connect with her on socials, and let us know what you think about Insecure once you watch it. Go ahead and tag us on Twitter at The Dive Studios. Let us know your thoughts. Yeah.
Yes. And
Dope Queen Phoebes is my Instagram handle. Yeah. So
Dope
there
Queen
you go.
Phoebes.
Cool. No, and yeah. And just to close this out, be sure to subscribe to Dive Studios on YouTube at youtube.com/Dive Studios. Follow us on IG at The Dive Studios. Follow us on TikTok. The platform that Eric is so terrified of. And if you are so compelled, please become a patron of ours at patreon.com/divestudios. We got some cool perks, full videos, opportunities to Zoom call with some of the team, And yeah, lastly, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. So yeah, so you don't miss any cool episodes such as this. And thank you so much.
Cool. Well, guys, talk to you guys very, very soon. Have a great day. Thank you, Phoebe. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.